Welcome, everybody, to episode number 288 of the best podcast in the world, the Sean Sports Talk Podcast. As always, I will be talking about the biggest news in the sports. There's plenty to talk about as the NBA bubble is coming to a climax, I should say, not a close, a climax, with the playoffs starting. UFC 252 last night, obviously baseball season in full swing, lots of things going on in the soccer world, some NFL things to talk about as well. But before I get into that, first and foremost, I hope everyone listening is everyone out there listening is staying safe and following their local and or federal COVID-19 guidelines and just making sure that you and your loved ones are safe. That's the number one priority. That comes before any podcast, any sports, anything like that. Health is obviously the number one priority. But going back to the podcast, thank you again so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a 5-star review on iTunes. Follow the show on Spotify, Sean Sports Talk once again. Visit my website at seansportstop.com for access to every single episode, 1 through 288, including all the famous athletes I've interviewed. You can listen through any platform through my website. Again, that's seansportstop.com, and you can read the articles that I've written. Once again, thank you so much for listening. And with that, let's get right into it, starting with the NBA. So the New Orleans Pelicans have fired head coach Alvin Gentry, the team announced on Saturday. He served in the role for over five seasons. According to Chris Mannix of Sports Illustrated, current Clippers assistant Tyronn Lue is considered a leading candidate to replace Gentry. I actually like that. For those of you that don't know, Tyronn Lue previously worked with Pelicans executive vice president of basketball operations David Griffin, who was the former Cavs GM from 2014 through 2017 with the Cleveland Cavaliers, obviously coaching them to their first ever NBA championship with LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Love on the team. Tyronn Lue was previously preferred by the Lakers to be their coach after they fired Luke Walton before this past season. Obviously, Frank Vogel is the Lakers coach. Happy the Lakers got Vogel over Tyronn Lue, but I think Tyronn Lue is a huge upgrade for the Pelicans over Alvin Gentry, no doubt. I mean, Gentry is a very solid coach who's been around for a long time, knows the game very well, obviously, but he's getting up there in age. He's made very questionable decisions throughout the games, in-game, and with the lineups coming into the game. And this is someone who follows the Pelicans very closely. They're my second favorite team behind the Lakers because Lonzo Ball is my favorite NBA player. Obviously, I still have love for Brandon Ingram and Josh Hart. They were part of the Lakers' young core, which they flipped to get Anthony Davis alongside LeBron James, which now made them the number one seed in the West. So I have love for the young core. Obviously, JJ Redick was on that team. Jackson Hayes and Jahlil Okafor, those guys are fun to watch. Obviously, the hype show with Zion Williamson. So overall, the Pelicans are a young, dynamic, very fun team to watch. I think if they didn't have the worst record in the NBA through about 20 games of the season, they would have easily made the playoffs. They beat a bunch of top teams, including the Lakers, the Mavericks, a bunch of top teams. They found their form very late. They lost very many close games, extremely like nail-biter, very close games. Still almost made the playoffs. This was their first year without AD with the young core and all that. So I think they'll be fine. According to Mark Stein of the New York Times, he reported that Jason Kidd, who is currently an assistant coach with the Lakers, is also up for consideration, and he will also feature in the Brooklyn Nets coaching search. Alvin Gentry is 65 years old. He had a very lackluster 175 and 225 record during his tenure, including a 30 and 42 mark in 2019-20, so definitely below where the Pelicans want to be. The Pelicans are in a good spot, I think, whoever takes over. I think Tyronn Lue, would be a big upgrade over Alvin Gentry, no doubt. And we'll see. I'm very excited to watch this Pelicans team in the years to come. Transitioning to more NBA, Giannis Antetokounmpo or LeBron James can have the regular season MVP award, but Damian Lillard just earned a one-of-a-kind award, winning the NBA bubble MVP. He was unanimously voted MVP, which to me is very surprising, for the league's seeding games at the Walt Disney World Resort on Saturday after thriving in the campus-like environment that was set up to resume the season after they suspended the season in March due to the obvious COVID-19 pandemic. Tim Reynolds of the Associated Press shared all of the NBA Bubble Award winners. So as I said, the MVP is Damian Lillard. The coach of the Bubble is Monty Williams from the Phoenix Suns. First team all bubble. Sounds pretty funny. Damian Lillard, James Harden, Luka Doncic, Devin Booker, and TJ Warren. And the second team is Giannis Antetokounmpo, Kawhi Leonard, Caris LeVert, Michael Porter Jr., and Kristaps Porzingis. So a few surprises like Caris LeVert, MPJ, TJ Warren. You can say there wasn't much competition for the MVP award since The Blazers entered the restart with a 29-37 record, three games behind the Grizzlies for the eighth spot, and Lillard averaged 38 points and 10 assists during the seeding games and shot 44% from three and led them to a 6-2 record. They moved into the eighth seed, which they then played Memphis in the play-in series between 8 and 9. Portland needed to win one, and Memphis needed to win two to get the playoff spot, and Portland won that game. So obviously Damian Lillard deserved the MVP award, but personally, my personal opinion, I believe that Devin Booker should have won the NBA Bubble MVP award. The Phoenix Suns went 8-0 after, you know, having an abysmal record, whatever it was, coming into the bubble. They went 8-0. Should have made the playoffs. I really wanted to see playoff Book. I mean, the Book in the playoffs would have been cold. I already know that. Him leading the Suns against the Lakers would have been an epic first round playoff matchup. Not that Dame, CJ, and Carmelo against the LeBron and AD against of the Lakers won't be epic, but I really wanted to see playoff Book personally. He still never made the playoffs, and we were so close. Portland beat Brooklyn by 1 point. I believe it was 133-132. So if Brooklyn won that game, and Brooklyn wanted to win, Brooklyn was playing hard, even though they had nothing to play for, really, already clinching their playoff spot. Brooklyn played hard. They lost by 1 point, and that 1 point was the difference between Phoenix making the playoffs and missing the playoffs, despite the fact that they were the only team to go 8-0 in the bubble. Absolutely amazing. And I'm just like the Pelicans, who had some heartbreak of their own. I'm very excited to see the Suns play in the future years, assuming that Devin Booker stays. Obviously, they have DeAndre Ayton, Ricky Rubio, guys like that. And Monty Williams is a very solid head coach. So, yeah, transitioning now to the NFL. The Houston Texans are looking to lock in quarterback Deshaun Watson to a long-term contract and have given themselves less than a month to do so. According to Jason McClain of the Houston Chronicle, the Texans are hoping to sign both Watson and linebacker Zach Cunningham to extensions before their week one game on September the 10th, which is again in less than a month, about 3 weeks from now. Watson's rookie deal is set to expire after the 2021 season. And following the Kansas City Chiefs signing their franchise player Patrick Mahomes to a contract worth over $500 million, the NFL's focus quickly turned to whether or not Watson will be next and how much he will make exactly. At the time, the Chronicle's Aaron Wilson reported no deal was, quote, imminent for the Houston quarterback, and that Watson's preference was for a short-term deal. Interesting that Watson reportedly preferred a short-term deal. Watson said, quote, "It's exciting for all of us." He was referencing the extension talks. "Only time will tell, but we're going to do everything we can to make sure it's on the right track. We're going to win a lot of games and championships while we continue to figure out that side of business too." So obviously the number 12 overall pick in the 2017 draft has earned two Pro Bowl nods and led the Texans to an AFC South title each of the past 2 years. He's also passed for almost 10,000 yards, over 70 touchdowns, and less than 30 interceptions, while rushing for over 1,200 yards and 14 touchdowns since entering the league. So obviously, he took the league by storm. He's a great dual-threat quarterback. Obviously, the Texans, franchise face other than J.J. Watt, especially when J.J. Watt will retire or move on. So I think the Texans should lock up Watson as soon as possible. I think they made a huge mistake with DeAndre Hopkins, and they better not make the same mistake with Deshaun Watson, because he is a very, 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 very good quarterback in the NFL, and they should keep him under any circumstance, and that's just my personal opinion. Switching gears to the UFC, to MMA, a huge event. The biggest heavyweight fight of all time was last night, and Stipe Miocic successfully defended his UFC heavyweight title with a unanimous decision win over Daniel Cormier to close out their trilogy in the main event of UFC 252. Obviously, Cormier knocked out Miocic in the first fight in round one. A year later, which was last year, Miocic knocked him out in the fourth round to reclaim the belt. And last night, Miocic went the distance. In my opinion, he won 4-1. Many people had it 3-2 for Miocic. Either way, Stipe was the clear winner. There were a couple of eye pokes on both sides. It looked like Stipe's eye poke against Cormier did more damage. One thing I do not understand is why Cormier, an Olympic wrestler, someone who is so good on the ground, knowing that Stipe doesn't have amazing takedown defense, didn't go for the ground game at all. It makes absolutely zero sense to me. Personally, the only thing I can think of is that Cormier wanted to show he had bigger balls. He wanted to show that he could beat Stipe at his own game for a second time, and that was not the case, clearly. Stipe was great in the clinch with, I believe, like 6 minutes of clinch control time. He had many double undercut hooks and things like that. So he just didn't really let Cormier do much. Cormier had some flashes. He had some explosive punches, explosive right hands, but overall, Stipe was the way better fighter. Despite looking better than the first two fights, Cormier was still looking pretty flat in his stomach, while Stipe looked to be in great shape, in my opinion. So now breaking it down by what I saw, the first round looked like two fighters who were familiar with one another fighting. Both had brief moments of success applying their game plan. Cormier was able to initiate the clinch and land some powerful strikes, while Stipe was able to establish some striking on the outside. Miocic opened up with only 1 minute left in the round, but Cormier responded with a huge overhand right. The second round was more of the same, but the ending was reversed. After a competitive round that saw a slight advantage for Cormier, the champ finished strong and nearly finished the fight with a snapping right hand that stunned DC. I thought the fight was over at that point, but Cormier survived. He was saved by the bell, in my opinion. The third round was largely built around DC surviving. He was really just trying to survive in there. He employed a clinch-heavy game plan that allowed Stipe to land with regularity, but not enough to put the fight in danger or really hurt Cormier. But the biggest part of that round was the fact that Stipe accidentally poked Cormier in the eye, which pretty much rendered his right eye useless. He couldn't see out of that eye. And despite the eye issue, Cormier was able to bite down on his mouthpiece, so to speak, and finish the round. And both fighters exchanged heavy leather going into the fifth and final round. And the fifth round was all Miocic. And in my opinion, Stipe's win cemented his status as the best heavyweight in UFC history. I thought, and many other people did as well, that whoever won would be largely considered the greatest UFC heavyweight of all time. Stipe wins the trilogy. He retains his belt. Unlike Cormier, who was saying that he will retire either way, whether he wins or loses this fight, it looks like Stipe is not done yet. And I mean, Cormier is the only fighter to beat Miocic over the last 5 years. And in that span, he beat people like Junior Dos Santos, Francis Ngannou, the boogeyman of the heavyweight division, and Alistair Overeem. So we'll see. I mean, we'll see what happens. I mean, I'd love to see Stipe versus Ngannou too. He can fight Curtis Blaydes, Derek Lewis, Jairzinho Rozenstrike. I mean, there are lots of guys in the heavyweight division. Alexander Volkov, Fabricio Werdum. There are plenty of guys he can fight. We'll see what he does. Hopefully he keeps fighting. Yeah, he's an amazing fighter. Definitely the greatest UFC heavyweight of all time, in my opinion. A family man, a stand-up person, a nice guy. And it's a pleasure to be able to watch his career live. Transitioning to college sports. Several major conferences have already postponed sports during the fall, and more could be on the way because of the risks involved with the coronavirus pandemic. Quote, right now, if testing stays as it is, there's no way we can go forward with sports, NCAA Chief Medical Officer Brian Hanlon told CNN. Hanlon is also the vice president of the NCAA Sports Science Institute, which was created, quote, to promote and develop safety, excellence, and wellness in college student athletes. The Big Ten has already postponed the fall season because of health concerns, including college football, and action followed by the Pac-12. So far, the SEC, ACC, and Big 12 are planning to continue with the season, but there have been health setbacks. Oklahoma recently had 9 players test positive for COVID-19 after getting a week off from training camp. Quote, we're not in a place today where we could safely play sports. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully college sports happen. This is very unfortunate. You know, I just want college sports. I mean, I'm going to be a college athlete this year myself, playing tennis in Southern California, and that's a spring sport. Most likely the season will happen. As far as I'm aware, with the college that I'm involved in and the colleges around it, fall sports will most likely happen. They will just be pushed back to the spring, and spring sports will be pushed back a little later than usual. So it's looking good. As far as these major colleges, like I said, the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, hopefully they can figure it out and give fans some college sports to offset the, just the whole craziness of 2020 and everything going on, the racial tension, the social tension in the United States and around the world, really, the global pandemic. I mean, it's been a crazy year. We're already in August. It's pretty crazy. And that's that. Switching gears back to the NFL, some good news. Alex Smith has been cleared to return to football activities for the first time since fracturing his leg in November of 2018. After 17 surgeries and a grueling rehabilitation process detailed in the ESPN documentary Project 11, Smith will take the next step in his comeback attempt. Elizabeth Smith, the quarterback's wife, posted videos on Instagram of their family celebrating earlier Saturday with the caption, quote, hard work pays off. NBC Sports Washington first reported the news on Saturday. Smith, who is already 36 years old, endured a spiral and compound fracture to his tibia and fibula in his right leg, along with necrotizing fasciitis and sepsis during his recovery that could have cost him his life. Unbelievable what he went through. Through it all, the number one overall pick in 2005 has maintained his desire to return to the field and continue his quarterback career in the NFL. And Saturday's development brings him one step closer. The next challenge, though, will feel a lot more normal for the longtime veteran battling for the starting role. As new Redskins, they're now the Washington football team. New Washington head coach Ron Rivera already commented that Smith will have his chance to win the job back from second-year pro Dwayne Haskins Jr., saying, quote, if Alex is healthy and continues to get healthy and we do activate him, he's going to be in the throes for this competition. It's going to unfold very nicely as a football team for us because the competition is only going to make you better. He's going to push the young guys as well. Smith obviously is a longtime veteran, starting over 160 career NFL games, compiling over 34,000 total yards with almost 200 touchdowns and just over 100 interceptions. So we'll see. I wish to see him do good. 17 surgeries is unbelievable. Hopefully he bounces back. Switching gears to some more college football. This has to do with the whole pandemic. The players of the Big Ten are not giving up on the 2020 college football season without a fight. Ohio State quarterback Justin Fields posted a petition Sunday on behalf of Big Ten players, calling on the conference to reinstate the season, saying, quote, we, the football players of the Big Ten, together with the fans and supporters of college football, request that the Big Ten Conference immediately reinstate the 2020 football season. Allow Big Ten players / teams to make their own choice as to whether they wish to play or opt out of this fall season. Allow Big Ten players / teams to choose to opt out of playing a fall season to do so without penalty or repercussion. We want to play. We believe that safety protocols have been established and can be maintained and mitigate concerns of exposure to COVID-19. We believe that we should have the right to make decisions about what is best for our health and our future. Don't let our hard work and sacrifice be in vain. # let us play. Absolutely, 100%. My full respect to Justin Fields. I 100% wholeheartedly agree. Let there be a season. Let players and teams / universities make up their own mind. Just like society should not instill staying at home or wearing a mask or doing all these things on individual people. It should be an individual choice, point blank, period. The petition has reached more than 35,000 signatures within a little more than an hour of Fields posting the plea on his Twitter feed. So that's amazing. Hopefully the season happens. That's all I really have to say. Transitioning to soccer, a potential huge development here. It's rumored pretty much every year, but this year seems a little different. Lionel Messi is looking for a transfer out of Barcelona, according to journalist Marcelo Beckler. Obviously, Barcelona was just beaten 8-2 by Bayern Munich in the Champions League quarterfinal on Sunday, and as a result, Messi reportedly wants to leave. So the biggest soccer transfer of our lifetime could be just around the corner. Messi's current contract expires after the 2020-21 season. However, just after their 8-2 loss, it could be over. Messi might have turned 33 in June, but he could probably name his next stop. Such would be the demand for his services. I mean, anyone would take him. He's a 6-time Ballon d'Or winner, which is the award for the best soccer player in the world. And he's on the wrong side of 30, but he's still more than capable of pulling off incredible goals. Just look at Zlatan Ibrahimovic playing for AC Milan and lighting it up. We never know where he can go. I mean, maybe Real Madrid and replace Cristiano Ronaldo. Maybe to Juventus to join Cristiano Ronaldo. Maybe. Who knows what will happen, but... It's really unbelievable that Messi, it seems like he really does want out this time. And so with that, I am transitioning to the NBA playoffs, and let me look at the bracket real quick. I'm gonna give my predictions here. Give me 1 second to pull it off. Excuse me. So round one, we have the Lakers and the Blazers. I'm going to analyze each one. So overall, I just think the Lakers have a better and deeper team. I mean, obviously, the top two Laker players are LeBron and AD, while the top two for Portland are Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. But Portland does have a very, very solid team. I'm not going to lie. They have Rodney Hood, Trevor Ariza, who I forgot was on the team, Joseph Nurkic, who's a walking double-double. He had like 17 and 15 at the half last game. Hassan Whiteside, Mario Hezonja, Zach Collins. I mean, they have a very solid team. Like Carmelo Anthony, who can light it up from three for sure. But, I mean, I just don't think that they can compare to the Lakers. The Lakers went 52-19, obviously first in the West. Like I said, LeBron and AD. Kyle Kuzma has been amazing in the bubble so far with his knockdown shooting and lockdown defense, but I'm not a rapper. I just think the Lakers are too good to lose to the Blazers personally. Next matchup, we have the LA Clippers and Dallas Mavericks. This is a very interesting series because obviously the Clippers are the heavy favorite here, but I think the Mavericks are no joke whatsoever. They have, you know, already not even future, current superstar Luka Doncic on their team. Luka Doncic, Kristaps Porzingis. Let me pull up the Mavericks roster here as well. Probably should have done this before starting the episode. Obviously, they have the GOAT, Boban Marjanovic. Seth Curry can light it up. J.J. Barea is a solid veteran. Tim Hardaway Jr., Dwight Powell, Trey Burke, Willie Cauley-Stein, Jalen Brunson, Dorian Finney-Smith, Dylan Wright, Courtney Lee. So they have a bunch of very solid players that many casual fans probably don't know about, in addition to Luka Doncic and Kristaps Porzingis. So I think the Mavericks are a very solid team. They went 43-32. I don't think they can beat the Clippers. I would say Clippers in six. As far as Lakers Blazers, I would say Lakers in five or six. Can't really commit to that yet. Not really sure. Next matchup we have is the Denver Nuggets and Utah Jazz. This is a very interesting series. The Nuggets, I believe, are the 3 seed, while the Jazz are the 6 seed. I think the Nuggets are way too stacked. I mean, the Nuggets have an amazing team. Bol Bol, who's been lighting up threes and dropping dimes, the 7-2 center. I mean, hardly a center. Nikola Jokic, who can do it all. Michael Porter Jr., who's been, he was all-bubble second team. Jamal Murray, who's a superstar. Gary Harris, Jeremy Grant, Monte Morris, Troy Daniels, Mason Plumlee, Paul Millsap, Will Barton. I mean, this team is deep. Very, very, very deep. I think they're too good for Utah to beat. Obviously, Utah is a great team. Very, very great team. They were 6th in the West. They have Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert, the sharpshooting Bojan Bogdanovic, Jordan Clarkson, Mike Conley, Joe Ingles. But that's about it. Everyone else is kind of irrelevant. So I think Denver is way deeper. Denver is the tallest team in the NBA. And I think Denver beats Utah in 6 games. Can't say 5. Next, we have a very, very, very intriguing matchup. The Houston Rockets and Oklahoma City Thunder. 4 versus 5. This is extremely intriguing because obviously James Harden and Russell Westbrook and Chris Paul are playing their former teams in the playoffs in their first season since being traded for each other. Obviously, Westbrook coming over from OKC to Houston and Chris Paul coming from Houston to OKC. OKC had a 0.2% chance of making the playoffs. People didn't even think Chris Paul would play, and here they are, the 5 seed in the West, facing against the Rockets in the first round. Obviously, Houston has former MVPs James Harden and Russell Westbrook, Robert Covington, the 3-and-D guy, PJ Tucker can knock it down from deep, Austin Rivers, Eric Gordon, Jeff Green, Luka Mbamute, David Nwaba, DeMar Carroll, Tavo Sefolosha. So a very, very deep and solid team for Houston. They don't have any big men, though. Unlike Denver, they have the smallest lineup in the NBA. Now let's take a look at the Oklahoma City Thunder. In addition to Chris Paul, that's not all they have. They have Steven Adams, who's an amazing center, Dennis Schroeder, Andre Roberson, who's back, Danilo Gallinari, an offensive machine, Darius Bazley has been solid, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a future star, if not already a current one, Nerlens Noel is a contributor, Terrence Ferguson, Mike Muscala. So this is an interesting series. If I had to bet, I would say, Houston in 7. I think this is a very solid series. I know many people would pick OKC in this one. I know Russell Westbrook might not even play in that series, but despite that, James Harden and the deep Houston Rockets, I can't bet against them. I just can't. Now going to the East, we have Milwaukee and Orlando. I don't need to analyze this one too much. I don't think Orlando gets a game. I think Milwaukee in 4, and it's pretty obvious. Then the Raptors and Brooklyn Nets. The Nets have exceeded expectations despite not having Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, and DeAndre Jordan, and also Spencer Dinwiddie. Their whole damn lineup, Caris LeVert is back, but he was gone for a while. For a long time, their whole damn lineup, their whole starting five was injured, so they've exceeded expectations, making the 7th seed in the East. But I don't think it's much of a competition for the Raptors, who have obviously Pascal Siakam, Kyle Lowry, Marc Gasol, Fred VanVleet. I just don't think they have a chance. I think Toronto in 5, possibly 4. Then we have a very interesting series, the Boston Celtics and Oklahoma City Thunder. I don't know what I'm saying. Excuse me. Boston Celtics and Philadelphia 76ers. I think Boston wins this one. I think they're too deep. Jason Tatum, Kemba Walker, Enes Kanter, Jaylen Brown, Gordon Hayward, Marcus Smart, Carson Edwards is solid. I just think they're too deep. Philly, obviously, they have Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, but they lost Jimmy Butler from last season. They lost J.J. Redick. They obviously have Tobias Harris, Al Horford. They added Al Horford from the Celtics as well, but I just don't think they're nearly as deep or as good as the Boston Celtics. That's my personal opinion. Then we have a very interesting series. So I would say Boston in 5 or 6, maybe 6. We have the Indiana Pacers and the Miami Heat. I believe the Pacers are the higher seed. Yes, they're fourth in the East. Victor Oladipo, Domantas Sabonis, TJ Warren, Malcolm Brogdon, TJ McConnell, Justin Holiday, Miles Turner, Doug McDermott, Aaron Holiday. They are very, very deep. TJ Leaf, very, very deep, very dynamic and versatile. But I'm going to have to give this one to the Miami Heat. I think Jimmy Butler is too clutch. I think Bam Adebayo is very good. Obviously, Tyler Hero. Duncan Robinson is one of the best three-point shooters, if not the best in the league. Goran Dragic, Andre Iguodala, the veteran, Udonis Haslem, Kendrick Nunn, Kelly Olynyk can light it up. So overall, I think the Heat are just better than the Pacers, and I would say Miami in seven because Indiana is a very, very solid team themselves. Now let's go second round. We got – what do we got? Oh, man, I think I might have screwed up the whole bracket. So you know what? What I'm going to do is this. I'm going to leave it at that. I'm going to keep track of my predictions, who I predicted, and – once the first round is over, I'll see how accurate I was. And then regardless of how accurate I was, I'll do second round predictions and eventually conference finals and then the NBA finals. So this was episode number 288 of Sean's Sports Talk. Thank you guys so much for listening, and I'll see you guys on the next one. We out.